Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Four seasons, over 30 incredible guests, hundreds of podcast recommendations. I'm your host, Laura Whitmore, and in this special series of Castaway, we'll bring you the best bits from our back catalogue, sharing those golden Castaway moments and throwing in those bingeable podcast picks we're all hungry for along the way. Welcome to Castaway, the best bits. Hello, hello. If you're here for this special series of Castaway, you've passed the test. You're a podcast obsessive. But I'd like to reassure you that you're in safe hands, as I too am a podcastaholic. Seriously though, we've got some great recommendations in this week's episode as we discuss all things popular culture. To kick us off, we have the wonderful Dolly Alderton, author and host of the iconic podcast series The Hi-Lo, which many fans are currently mourning. Dolly and I chatted about the fantastically smooth listen, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin. The next podcast I want to talk about is the longest running one that you've mentioned. And I actually didn't realise how long it's been going for because I got into it about 2 years ago or so. But it's Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin. And well, we do mention like everyone has a podcast. And you always wonder, you know, when you have like an actor who's probably so used to being interviewed all the time, when they turn the tables and they become the interviewer. And I talked about this about David Tennant, because I just think he's the best interviewer because he doesn't really say much and he gets so much out of the people he talks to. And now I want to talk about Alec Baldwin, because I know he can probably split opinions, but I love Alec Baldwin as an interviewer.
I'm so pleased to hear that, Laura, because I feel like I am an Alec Baldwin podcast apologist everywhere I go. I feel like people have really
Don't apologise for
it. I know. I think people have really, it's not actually lots of people, but I think it's a lot of people of our generation maybe, because he's got quite an old school style about
him, isn't it?
The way he conducts conversations. Yeah, it's not the only interviewing style that I like, but I like it. And, you know, there's something about, he's such a New Yorker. When you hear that Miles Davis soundtrack that begins, he's got this beautiful, like, velvety delivery. He is quite lovey-ish. He is quite, you know, flirty and, I don't know, very charming with his guests. He wants warmth. He wants connection. He's not, you know, hard-hitting. He's not, like, challenging, I don't think, really. But for me, when I'm walking around Camden Town on like a rainy day in February and I'm listening to that, it feels glamorous and authoritative and confident, and I just really enjoy listening.
He's
to
also
it.
Just got a great voice, just
he
the
does.
Sound of it. It's just sometimes you just want someone who's just got a great voice. And I mean, he's such a well-known actor, and you forget, it's so recognisable. The minute he opens his mouth, you're like, that's Alec Baldwin. And I feel he's going to control the situation. He's just got that presence.
I totally agree. You feel like you're in a really safe pair of hands with him as a broadcaster. And he also, because probably of his profile, he pulls in really big names. And the other thing I like about him, because he's obviously not a journalist, he's not interested in this idea really of like the like topical interview. Like sometimes he is, like he'll do a kind of controversial Zoom chat with Woody Allen when his memoir came out. And to be fair to him, what your opinions are on Woody Allen or not, or whether you think he should be given a platform, I didn't see any other podcast interviews with Woody Allen during that time. And he does go to places that maybe more journalistic broadcasters would be more nervous or self-conscious to go to, or people who maybe are more embedded in the Twitter sphere. And he does just get these interviews, even if it's nothing to do with anything, Debbie Reynolds or Spike Lee or Julie Andrews, people who don't have work coming out that week that they're talking about, but these like great, great figures of classic popular culture.
It was initially supposed to be two series, but now 7 years later, over 150 interviews, it's
really?
Still going.
Tell me, which ones are have you got any favourites?
Was it Billy Joel he had on? Did you hear that one?
Yeah, I mean, even for me, Laura, that got a bit lovey-ish when they started doing that bloody sing-along around the piano.
I'm so for that. I'm so for that. I needed that in my life at that time. So I was all about that. I just wish I was there. But that's the thing. You do feel like you're there. It's different than watching a TV show. Like, you kind of feel like you're eavesdropping and you're part of it.
Drummer couldn't figure out what to play. Phil actually told him, play a backwards samba. Boom. Da boom. Bop. Boom. Cha boom. Plataka. Boom. And it worked. It was like a backwards song. What are we doing? We didn't know what we were doing. But Phil was right. I came in with the idea of playing Only the Good Die Young as a reggae. Come out, Virginia. Don't let me wait. Can't the liquor stop much too late. Liberty throws his sticks at me. He goes, why are you doing? Because the closest you've been to Jamaica is Queens. What are you doing?
It's changing trains to go down to Seaford.
Change at Jamaica.
So for the train to Spionk.
That's it. He said, I'm not playing this. What are we going to do? So Phil came up with this shuffle against straight fours. And the guitars are going, banana, banana, bop, bop, banana. And we were playing it. And it worked. It was like two things jammed into each other. Phil knows how to do that. And when we would get tired or we get discouraged, he'd say, just stay. Stay a little longer. Try one more. All right, take a break. Let's have some Chinese, okay? Go back in. The post-Chinese food takes were always good. Right. I don't know why that was.
Yeah, that MSG, man, it gets right into the fingertips.
It worked.
Yeah.
I've said from the start that my dream castaway guest is David Tennant. Guys, does anyone listening know David Tennant? I'm serious. David Tennant, are you listening? Slide into my DMs. David's voice might just be one of the smoothest in Britain. I do like Scottish accents, but it totally makes sense why he does have his own podcast. And he's so good at asking questions too. And I'm still campaigning to get him on the show. Recommended by multi-talented G. Fletcher in season one, G explains the feel-good, friendly nature of David's podcast, thanks to the safe space he creates for his guests. Check it out. G, I have to talk about another podcast that you listen to. And I love you even more because you listen to this. And people who work on this podcast know that he is my guilty pleasure. And that is David Tennant.
Oh.
And David Tennant does a podcast. If the man couldn't get any better, he's only brought out a podcast.
Well, what's interesting about him is I think he talks to people who would normally shy away from doing a podcast and having those conversations that are so personal, you know. And he just has got into their homes or got into their spaces. And there's just something lovely about hearing people who he obviously has a relationship with or truly admire him and he admires them, just chatting. And it's amazing to feel like you're a part of it.
Yeah, you're right. Because when you see a lot of those people like James Corden, Olivia Colman, Whoopi Goldberg? Did I see that as well?
Goldberg, Ian McKellen.
Yeah, like you'd see them in situations where maybe they're on a Graham Norton or a Jonathan Ross, but in a very, you know, television kind of organised manner where they're probably a little bit guarded. They're on promo.
Yeah.
While here, you're right, we're friends kind of, just having a little conversation.
They know that he is not there to trap them into saying something that they're going to regret. They're saying it in a really safe place in front of someone who just has nothing but love for them.
When were you born?
71.
Oh, that's really
old. I know.
It's not. I'm 74. Born 74.
January the 30th.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look at you.
See, I've got notes in front of me.
My God. Do you know, once on whatever it is, Wikipedia, they had my birthday as the wrong day, the wrong month, and sort of 8 years before I was born.
Oh, my God. Appalling.
So I emailed them pretending it wasn't me. I was at school with her, and actually that's not her birthday.
Because you couldn't get...
I didn't want to think they were being so vain.
What name did you make up?
I can't remember. This was years ago.
Did you use the name of someone you were actually at school with?
No, I just think I gave my nickname Collie. I'm thinking they wouldn't know.
Right.
And
now they know.
And then didn't get a reply. And then I wrote again going, I'm sorry, guys, but this is, I know it's wrong. And they didn't reply. And then I said, okay, it's me. And this is really upsetting that you've made me 8 years older than I actually am.
Awful.
And they said, we'd have to see a birth certificate to prove. And I went, whose fucking birth certificate did you look at in the first place to make me 8 years older? And so then they changed it. And then I thought, fuck, I should have lied.
So you had to get angry and swear at them for them to take attention.
I should have lied and said I was younger.
Yeah, it's that no barrier. It's just a gorgeous chat.
I mean, I have to say, I didn't see it coming when he brought it out. I was like,
no!
At all. But he does have
actually, my boyfriend, who's also Scottish, is a bit jealous because I have this guilty pleasure about, I talk about David Tennant quite a lot. And he's like, he sounds like me. Why is he on a podcast? He's got enough going on when they're trying to use his voice for things.
Yeah, from the moment they get in there.
Yeah.
Where they're like, I think it's Olivia. Does Olivia turn up with her dogs? And their dogs are going around.
Yeah.
Just taking those little things that are happening, and it's not all, you know, polished, and it just feels like you're hanging out.
It's real life, isn't it?
Mm. And he knows things about them that, you know, that we don't know because he's worked with them.
I wish David Tennant knew things about me. Oh. Do you know, I didn't know David Tennant, that's not his name.
What?
Do you know what his real name is?
What?
David MacDonald.
Shut up. That's true.
His name is David MacDonald and he changed it. It doesn't work the same, does it?
David MacDonald.
He changed it because there was another actor who obviously didn't go on to do the same amount of things. And he changed it to Tennant because of Pet Shop Boys, because of Neil Tennant.
No.
He was reading Smash Hits. And he was just reading, he had to change his name. He needed to do something. And he saw Tennant, so he went, oh, let's go with that.
That's so funny.
Isn't that great?
I also love the fact that his wife is the daughter of another Doctor Who. Yeah. She posted a photo once of him and David changing a light bulb. And it was that, how many doctors did it take?
I mean, that household has got to be a lot of fun. In this episode, Jordan North included How to Wow with Chris Evans as one of his top listening recommendations. How to Wow with Chris Evans focuses on sharing the wisdom and experience from amazing guests and really hones in on the stories where amazing people achieve amazing things. Here's Jordan explaining why he loves this podcast. Now, speaking of another legend, Chris Evans, but this is a podcast, How to Wow. Tell me about this.
Oh my God, this is... Honestly, this is so good. I don't know why he's not done a podcast sooner. And I think he only started it in September, October. And already he's released about, he's probably done about 30 or 40 episodes. And what I gather with Chris Evans is when he's into summer, he's into it. And he's like, pow, pow, pow. And he's like a toddler that runs around a room. And my housemate told me about this. And he said, you've got to listen to this. It's good. And as I was packing for the castle...
that sentence is amazing. As I was packing for the castle, like, you know what I mean. If you told your younger self, that would be something that you'd say in a podcast.
Oh God, who am I? So when I was getting ready to go away to Wales,
there you go.
I put it on, and I still think now to the day that the first episode he did with Bryony Gordon is the best one. So she's a journalist.
Yeah.
And she talks about her alcoholism and it's just them chatting for about an hour and a half. And it's so good. I think he's one of the best interviewers going at the moment. And you know Chris Evans for like this big, energetic breakfast show that he did on Radio 2 and now he does it on Virgin. But he's a great interviewer. And his energy in this podcast is just great. And he gets people on and he lets them talk. And he asks the best questions. And I think he's a really good interviewer. And he did another really good episode. And basically, he's got Richard Osman on there. And Richard Osman's like, and I'm a TV and radio geek. And he's like, talking about how to pitch TV shows. And I'm listening to this. I'm writing notes down in my phone going, oh, that's how you do it. Because he's basically said, there's no new idea. Because he worked for Endemol for years, didn't he? He's like, I've done this for years. Yeah. Trust me. And it's just, he gets the best out of him. And his energy is infectious, and I know people that have worked with him, and that's a big thing when he's on the radio, and I think he transports that into a podcast, is you've got to sound like you're having the best time in the world.
You've got to be enjoying it to still do it. One thing that we mentioned there, you know, when you're on a podcast, you see a different side to people, like who you're interviewing. You just, they're a little bit more relaxed. Also, I think it's lovely to see someone like Chris Evans, who we know from the radio, high energy, you know, I grew up watching him on telly, and especially quick shows, to do a podcast where there's a little bit more space. I do feel like there's a little bit of a, he's still Chris Evans and we all know and love, but I don't know, I do feel like a podcast is still a different domain for him.
Definitely, and I think he's finding his feet with it, but I also think he's really excited by it and he's really into it and he's just releasing episodes everywhere. I think he's doing two a week at some points, but I just hope he doesn't get bored of it. I can't keep up with him. There's that many, but definitely like listen.
Waking up early, set your alarm at 6 a.m. just to listen to him.
Just to listen to him. But yeah, listen to the Bryony Gordon one. She talks so openly about her struggle with alcoholism and how she didn't realise she was an alcoholic and she's like how she used to embarrass herself on nights out and stuff. You just listen to it and you're like, wow.
We talk about rock bottoms a lot in sobriety. And I remember when I went to treatment, I remember the person saying to me, that the therapist saying to me, addiction is a lift going down, right? So you can choose to get off whenever you want. But if you get back on, you will go further down. And it was interesting because I decided to stop drinking after a night out almost 3 years ago now. And it wasn't any worse particularly than any of my other nights that I'd had. But it was, I think I was like hollowed out by self-loathing. I just couldn't do it anymore. So, you know, on a sort of get down to the nuts and bolts, I had that August 2017, I had like, I tried to get sober before. I'd run a marathon, my first marathon in April 2017. And I'd sort of done that to prove to myself that I could stop drinking. I was like, this is what's going to stop me from drinking so much. And it didn't. So I stopped drinking for the duration of running the marathon. But if anything, I sort of hit the booze harder. It was like, I was having to balance out the scales. So you'd go off and do like a 10-mile run and then I'd have a pint for each mile afterwards. And I tried to get sober after that marathon because I'd seen this different way of living, but I'd fallen off the wagon and again, and it got really bad really quickly. So I went to a friend's 40th in the countryside and that sort of ended in an assault basically, which I still find really difficult to sort of vocalize. And then but a few days after that, I just went out on the bank holiday weekend, even though I was supposed to be going away with my husband and daughter. I just left them in the house. And the most important thing to me was to get pissed, was to get out of it. Like nothing else mattered. And I just went AWOL on the night. Nothing terrible happened to me, but I sort of came to in a sort of near stranger's house at flat and to messages from my husband saying, where are you? This is not tenable anymore. You know, you're worrying us too much. And I was 37. I had a 4-year-old daughter and I sort of on paper had it all, you know, a house in Clapham and a best-selling book. And I was interviewing people like Prince Harry, but I was sort of dying inside, you know.
You kind of think of Chris Evans as the, I know back in the day, the party boy. I just remember like he was like the wild child. And I'm sure there's lots of comparisons that, you know, he can kind of get Bryony to speak about things that she's very open. Her books are brilliant, but it's just nice seeing her interviewed by someone like a Chris Evans.
Definitely. And I say, when I get messages on Twitter and stuff and people say, I want to get into radio, what should I do? I always say, buy his two books. Mm-hmm. Read his two autobiography. Like in this autobiography, he talks about, you know, all the fast cars and all the money he had, but like he puts a radio clock, like a running order in the book. Like he sketches it in and it's like nobody who's not into radio would be interested in this. And it's a fascinating insight into his life when he was in the 90s. And
I know that you love reading and stuff. And I had to laugh when I was watching I'm a Celebrity because you mentioned the lads at the deck that you'd read their books. Because when I first got the I'm a Celeb job and I did 5 series of it, I got their first book, Autobiography, and read it before I went to Australia. And I only met them in Australia. And I remember them telling a story and like, we're having drinks. I think it was like Aunt's birthday. And I knew all the stories. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then you're like, oh, no, this is so embarrassing. Like, I've read your life story. So, like, I know this.
Look,
it's so embarrassing when that happens.
It is. And this is why they say don't meet your heroes. And, you know, if we're saying Chris Evans is the best in radio and Miles and so many others, but then you've got to think TV-wise, it's them guys, isn't it?
Big time. You know?
They're the top of the game. And I used to watch them on SMTV. Everyone goes on about Wonky Donkey, but like Chums and...
Oh my God. See, the UK afterwards was a little bit cooler, but yeah, Chums, all of it.
Yeah. Oh. And they used to do a sketch called Eminemadale that people forget about, where Eminem had just come on and wrecked the set. And they used to do the Vicar of Dribbley as well, where they used to spit water on each other and stuff.
Oh, great. I love it. Next up, the wonderful Deborah Frances White chose a classic podcast in the form of Best Pick Podcast, which features John Dorney, Jessica Regan, and Tom Selinsky. At the beginning of 2018, the trio set themselves a task to put the names of all the Academy Award Best Picture winners in a hat, draw them out in a random order, and then discuss each one in turn. Here's Deborah explaining why this made it on her list. We're going to move on to your next pick, which is Best Pick. And actually, I hadn't heard of this podcast, so thank you for bringing it to my attention. Tell me a little bit about Best Pick.
Well, despite my throbbing bias on this one, because it is...
Isn't it your company?
It is my company, but also my husband and his two cinephile friends. They're mad cinephiles, wild cinephiles. John Dorney, Jessica Regan. They decided to watch every single Oscar Best Picture winner.
Wow.
And they research it. They research the year, what else was happening in film. They research what happened at the Oscars that year. They research all of the gossip from the film. And they deliver all of their findings. Then they watch the film. And then you on the podcast, of course, you can watch it if you want. Or you can just, you know, there's just, they just play a bit of the soundtrack so that you know, oh, they've watched it now. And then they review it. Then they sit together and they say, what did you think of it? Of course, sometimes they've seen it before, years ago. Sometimes they've never seen it. And they ultimately ask the question, did the Academy get it right? And so they have to do a lot of watching around that film. So Tom's like every night, he'll be like, I need to watch this.
Well, I was going to ask, are you watching them with him? Does that mean that you kind of have to sit there as the TV taken up with him watching the winning film from whatever year?
It's like you live in my flat, Laura. It's like, I've got to watch.
You're upstairs in the bar at this stage, Deborah. You're upstairs in the loft having
absolutely.
A drink.
Absolutely. Because it's like, oh, I've got to watch this classic from 1937, you know, and then I sort of, you know, walk upstairs. And of course, I want to be watching The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And in there, he's in there watching some sort of, you know, golden age of the musical, you know, sort of, oh, lad, oh, the whole night through, it's truly above you. And this is not Singing in the Rain. This is the movie that predated the Singing in the Rain, that Singing in the Rain that song came from, that he's doing for some research for Singing in the Rain. I'm like, oh, my God. But it just won a Bronze Award for Best Arts Podcast, but Arts and Culture podcast at the British Awards. Podcast Awards.
Yeah.
And it's a small show, you know. They started it on their own just because they loved it. And they said, look, if we get a little audience, we want to do this for ourselves. And we are learning, we're going to educate ourselves about cinema because we love cinema. And if anyone listens, great. And they had that attitude of, if we have a small audience who care as much as we do, we don't care, frankly, if we're entertaining, you know, 100 people. And it built and built and built and built. And now, you know, Jessica said to me that she was at, before lockdown, BFI screenings where all of these film critics were coming up and going, we use this as a resource. We absolutely adore the show. The research is really serious. Mm. And also they're having a good time. So they do serious in-depth research and they check their facts. There was a great story Tom told about the Oscars where in 1933, again, this is my life, Will Rogers, as in the archaic Will Rogers, read out the winner of Best Director with the words, come up and get it, Frank. Instead of saying the winner is, he said, come up and get it, Frank. Frank Capra, who was nominated, jumps out of his seat to collect the award, confused as to why the spotlight had not found him. He's actually almost at the stage and then he sees Frank Lloyd, lit, on the other side of the room, get up and claim the award. Two Franks. That's why you don't say come up and get it, Frank. Frank Capra has to skulk back to his seat.
Do you remember that happened though? Remember, was it Warren Beatty who read out La La Land a few years ago? That's happened a few times now. Just double check when you're given, when I gave out my British Podcast Awards, I made sure to read what I saw written down and not just make it up myself.
Me too. It's so, I mean, that was terrible, that Moonlighter La La Land one. But, you know, it's not all kind of implausibly over your head film criticism either. The year that they looked at Annie Hall, which is, you know, an art house film, they all said that it should have been Star Wars that won. The year that they looked at Deer Hunter, John said it should have been Superman. You know, there are times when they also have a sort of accessible view of films and they say, look, this film is so much more influential. I guested on one and it was American Beauty, which I don't think holds up to be a Best Picture winner at all. Mm-hmm. But that was the year The Matrix came out. The Matrix wasn't even nominated, and it's so much more an influential film.
I think also hindsight, it's when you kind of see a few years on which ones have actually stood the test of time and which ones are still feel relevant. Also, with each different film, I know from some of the ones that I've listened to, I think it's really telling of that time. And I remember the one they talked about was The Shape of Water in 2017. And this was just, you know, as the height of the Me Too movement was happening. And I think it's really interesting seeing what film won at that time. And that kind of starts other conversations to the podcast as well.
Absolutely. Well, they often get me on for a feminist one. That's what American Beauty was partly about, you know, the depiction of this relationship and Kevin Spacey and so on and so on. And so we talk about those issues, but you've got to talk about it because that's the year. And if that's what won, mm-hmm. that's what won. And you've got to look at it. And I think actually looking at it in context and also analysing why these stories were told or how they were told, it can be very, very useful in creating the sort of world and storytelling we wish to create going forward.
One of the things I find interesting in the research as well was that that part was originally offered to Kirsten Dunst. And she turned it down because she wasn't comfortable with the content, with the nudity and saying, and kissing Kevin Spacey, and found it an awkward thing. She was 15 at the time. And you're thinking, yeah, I can completely understand that.
She also found it quite traumatising when she had to kiss Brad Pitt when she was about 7 or 8. She did Interview with the Vampire. And she has gone on to say, like, that was actually horrible and I didn't enjoy it. And, you know, with no disrespect to Brad Pitt, but you kind of look back on it now and you go, they didn't need to mouth kiss. That wasn't a thing that we needed to see. It could all have been implied.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I wonder what Manu Suvari's journey has been, because you do attract a lot of creeps when you do roles
like
that.
Well, she was 20 years old when she made the film, though. Mm. And I think that's old enough to kiss Kevin Spacey.
Oh, sure.
I mean, Kevin would say too old. Is that wrong? Sorry.
Well, let's talk about this, because we're watching this film now in 2018 and certain facts about Kevin Spacey have come to light. So, Deb, do you have a view about how we should approach watching films like this where we know things maybe we'd rather not know about some of the people involved in their
making?
Well,
this year at the Golden Globes, Seth Meyers opening with Welcome, Ladies and Remaining Gentlemen. And, I mean, our canon of films we can watch is rapidly diminishing. I mean, our DVD shelves are frankly decimated.
Bye-bye, X-Men.
I mean, well, here's the thing, though. Here's the counter-argument to that. I think when it's an artist, if it's a Woody Allen, Hannah Gadsby said the other day, people said, oh, you've got to separate the artist from the work. And she said to me, OK, then, let's look at his work. Manhattan, it's a film about a middle-aged man having sex with an underage girl or a
she's 17. Yeah. It's quite clear in the film.
Mm. Yeah. Louis C.K.'s film that is unreleased is called Daddy, I Love You, and is about some of these issues.
I Love You, Daddy. I Love You, Daddy.
It's an older man, young woman, power dynamic film. So I would suggest, okay, if an artist has authored something, then often their values have seeped into their work. And I am absolutely not for revisionism or censorship or anything like that. But if I've only got so many hours in a week or a month or a year to watch things, I think I'd rather watch something made by some... we're just so drenched in this kind of toxic masculinity and power imbalance. And sometimes I just feel like we're bathing in the milk of toxic masculinity. So listen, I'm not for take half the paintings out of the National Portrait Gallery by any means, because it's part of our history. And if you write all those things out of our history, it doesn't explain why the power imbalance exists in life. However, I've only got so many hours in a year to watch things. So I want to choose to watch things which I feel are empowering. Where it comes to films with Kevin Spacey in, where he's taken the job, here's my problem with going, you can't watch any film with Kevin Spacey in. If I say I can't watch any film with Kevin Spacey in, including American Beauty, Annette Bening's performance is erased. And why should it be? It is phenomenal. Why does Kevin Spacey's appalling behaviour get to erase the work?
I think Christopher Plummer's too old.
Lol.
Ready to pop the question? The jewellers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
On the same vein, the lovely Emma Gannon shouted out the Awards Chatter podcast, which features in-depth interviews with the most interesting and accomplished people in show business. Over to you, Emma. The final podcast that's on your recommendations list is Awards Chatter podcast, and it's in-depth interviews with the most interesting and accomplished people in show business. Scott Feinberg created it and hosts it. Tell me a little bit about this podcast.
So this is kind of what it says on the tin. It's a podcast interviewing Hollywood's finest actors or directors. And it's, you know, it's the Oscars of podcasts, really. It really gets in there with everyone who's nominated for all the big awards. And it's not really that it's like the celebrities I'm interested in. It's more that Scott is the most incredible interviewer. He researches like I've never seen before. He'll remind people of things in their lives where they're like, oh my God, I can't believe you know that. Like, I forgot about that. He'll be, you know, like to Olivia Colman or something. He's like, in 1994, you did this. And she's shocked at how he remembered that or found that. So it's a really incredible journey through someone's career. It's not just about the film they're in. It's like taking that actor through their life. I suppose it's a bit like Desert Island Discs, but without the music. He just really gets the truth of their career out of them. And I love it.
And when you say you were getting work even beyond that collaboration, that was The Office, right? Black Books, around that time.
Yeah.
Green Wing. So,
gosh, well done.
No, well, I just think it's to say that there was a lot of comedic work at the beginning, which for people who have only caught up maybe more recently might be a little surprising.
I suppose, yeah.
But I guess the big one with them that, and really in terms of probably at that point putting you on a radar larger than anything up to that point would have been Peep Show.
Yes.
Can you explain for any Americans who are, again, late to the party, just, you know, what that involved?
Sounds rude, Peep Show. It's not. Well, it's not as rude as you think it is. Right. But, so Peep Show was Sam Bain and Jesse Armstrong, who wrote together, and they sometimes write, you know, their own things as well. They had been writing for other people, and so had Rob and David. And I think they all met when they were all writing for someone else. And Sam and Jesse just thought, these two are hilarious and we should write something for them. I think that's how it all worked out. And it's all filmed from POV, point of view. So we had a camera. Initially, it was sort of on a hat on our head.
Really?
Yeah. and it was, well, we're not very good camera people. And it also, as you got hot and sweaty wearing this thing on your head, it would start to slide.
Oh, my
and you've
God.
Got to, and someone would grab the back of your head to try and keep your head.
Right,
so
right.
The camera's still getting the right image. And then after the first series, they realised that was silly. And so we got a proper camera op
who
did it with the digicam. And then we put our arms around him to do all of the stuff and drinking. And I'm doing hand signals, which is rubbish. I'm so sorry.
We know actors for playing a certain role. Same about musicians. We know them for their music. We don't really know them as a person. We'll see them do interviews for promo or red carpets, being at the awards ceremony, picking up the award. And sometimes I feel the most insight you get is when they accept the award, but then the music comes and they have to be shoved off stage because no one has longer than, you know, a few minutes. This is, as you said, it's an in-depth interview. They're long interviews. There's a lot of research in there and it's a journey for the interviewee as well.
It is. And it, like you say, you know, when you go on a Wikipedia page and you're like, wow, this person, look at what they've done. This is like the Wikipedia page, but with all of the rejections in there as well. And so they'll tell you about the audition. They, you know, one of them, I can't remember which interview it was, but it's a really high profile actor who basically says that he was up for the role of like Jack in Titanic or something and didn't get it. And like, you realize that these are people who, they've all been rejected. And I think we forget that about actors, is that a lot of them will have auditioned for a role and then they'll probably have to see that movie like in the cinemas and know that they didn't get it. And so it's really interesting hearing all about that stuff.
It's humanizing, isn't it? Humanizing people.
Yeah, exactly. It's that, you know, these actors are no different really from anyone else in terms of going for a job interview and sometimes getting it and sometimes not.
It's just mostly they don't get it. That's how it works.
Yeah.
Turning away from their usual interests, the dream duo at Red Handed provided us with an American favourite back issue, a podcast that looks back at some of the formative moments in pop culture. As hosts Tracy Clayton and Josh Gwynn ask questions such as, how did we let this happen? Two, why do we still love this? Here's what Hannah and Saruthi love about it. The next podcast that is on your recommendations is Back Issue. Tell me about Back Issue.
So when we started Red Handed in 2017, Another Round, which is a podcast produced by BuzzFeed, hosted by Tracy Clayton and Heaven Nagatu, was it. It was the biggest show in the world. It won every award. And Tracy shouted us out on Another Round when we'd only been going for, like, I think literally 3 months. So we felt like that was couldn't possibly be real. So we got in touch with Tracy and kept this dialogue going with her. And she's been an incredible mentor in the podcast.
Wait, did you message her and go, is this real?
Yes.
Tracy, is this real?
Are you the real Tracy Clayton?
After we had a total meltdown in the pub, when we realized as well that Tracy had done this.
And she's come on Red Handed now, and she's a wonderful friend. And also the most charismatic person I've ever met. Like, every sentence out of her mouth is a soundbite, which makes her A, an icon, and B, effortless podcaster. So Back Issue is her most current show that she's doing with a guy called Josh Gwynn, who's a producer over at Pineapple Street. And it's just about pop culture, which is my favorite one is the one they did about America's Next Top Model. Yeah. And you don't think about it at the time, but some of it is really problematic. But, like, still my favorite pop culture moment of all time is Tyra losing her absolute mind at Tiffany, being like, learn something from this. And there is a whole episode of Back Issue about that moment. Like, what else could you want? Yeah. And then also they get J. Manuel on to explain what it was like being the art director.
Before we go there, let's rein it back and kind of revisit some of the moments that we think of when we think of the name Tyra Banks. And then see if Jay maybe has some of the answers. But first, the stunts.
I cannot think of a stuntier queen
than Tyra Banks.
Josh, I don't know if you're aware, but Tyra has made some decisions in her day.
Oh, I know.
Did a couple of wild things, like that time she gave out Bedazzled Vaseline to her talk show audience, and they were so excited for some reason.
I think about that like once a week. Or that time that she went undercover as like homeless and she just like put dirt on her face and was like, I'm homeless now.
Oh my. And then she did the same thing when she went undercover as an overweight person in like a fat suit.
I remember that. Like, or remember when she had Kenya from America's Next Top Model like pretend to be an elephant?
When, like, she was real, like, worried about her weight.
Exactly.
Yes. Could have been a coincidence.
We're going to get into that one later for sure.
Yes.
We have to spend some time there.
We must, because I'm still not over that. I'm still not over a lot of things. But that.
Right. She has this tendency to make everything about herself. Like, one time she gave Miley Cyrus a birthday present for her 16th birthday, and it was a picture of her at 16.
What? Wait. Hold on. Time out. Wait a second. Did this happen like in real life?
Yeah, it happened in real life. They were at Disneyland.
At Disneyland? Wait.
That is me at 16 years old. So what I want to do is I'm going to give you this. This symbolizes me, and I'm so proud of you.
Oh my gosh.
You're carrying the torch to the 16-year-olds.
I could like not ask for a cooler present.
Really? Tyra Banks gave Miley Cyrus two pictures of her for her birthday.
This represents me on your day, but it's about me on your day.
Happy birthday to
me.
You. Here's a picture of
me.
I hope you can be like me. Happy birthday to me. From Tyra Banks. She's so goofy.
I mean, there's all different types of moments they talk about, and it's all like well-known moments in pop culture that you wouldn't think you could make a podcast out of. The one I listened to was, and this brings me back, like MTV Video Music Awards, but remember Brandy and Monica? Do you remember they had that song together? And then they apparently had this punch up. And then you're like, oh my God, a whole podcast where we can talk about this and scrutinize this. And I love it. Again, it's kind of similar to why we're so obsessed with murders and stuff. We just love, I don't know, there's certain people in pop culture we just become obsessed with, and we kind of want to know or think that we should know what's going on behind the scenes.
Absolutely. And I think the Tyra Banks one in particular is such an eye-opener, because I think so many of our generation, especially women, grew up watching that show and loving it. And then here is this podcast now, a way in which we as modern women now consume our entertainment. And it's critiquing all the incredibly problematic things that were happening in our childhood from this show we were obsessed with. I think that's just such a fascinating premise for a show, and absolutely why it works. And to be honest, anything Tracy did would work. But of course, if it's about pop culture,
even better.
And last but not least, we have the hilarious Jamie Lang sharing the cult phenomenon US show Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, which endearingly pokes fun at the fact that all of Conan's friends are the people that work for him. Have a listen.
But this is Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. And after, I think, about 25 years of being, you know, on the late night show and interviewing all these great stars, Conan said he realized that the only people at his holiday party were the men and women who worked for him. He was like, I have no friends. And all these people he'd interview as celebrity guests, he never really had a real friendship with them. So he decided to start a podcast to get friends.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. He is, you know, and I think this happens to a lot of people where you kind of go through life, you know, not really, you know, and I think I did this for a while where I was just kind of focused on myself a lot and focused on what I was achieving and different things. And I think a lot of people do that, especially if you're highly successful. You just focus on work all the time, and that's what you do. And Conan O'Brien was one of these people that I actually came across quite late. I started watching his YouTube videos. This is about 6 years ago, and he's an amazing chat show host in America. I think he's one of the best. He does one of the late shows. A very funny stand-up comedian. He was doing all these YouTube videos where he interviews his staff, or he interviews different people and things like that. And he was hilarious. And he then went and started doing his podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. And honestly, for me, it is one of the funniest podcasts out there, because the way his mind works is so random, creative, and quick. The way he has chats with different individuals, and he's highly intelligent. Mm. It's just such a refreshing relief, because I sort of became frustrated with a lot of interview shows out there. So you see The Late Show with James Corden, or even Graham Norton is the master at it. He's unbelievable to make it seem so relaxed and calm and chilled. But at the same time, you know, all of the guests who go on these shows, they kind of know what questions are going to come up and what's going to be said and how it's going to flow in some sort of way. And with Conan O'Brien's podcast, you don't know where it's going to go. You don't know how people are going to react. You don't know what's going to happen. And people pay thousands of pounds for writers and people to sit in a room and come up with amazing content. But on his podcast, he just sits there, and the content he comes up with and the conversations he has, you couldn't pay any writer in the world to come up with that, because it's too random and authentic. And that's why it's such a great podcast.
And do you know who he's had on that podcast? Paul Rudd.
He's had Paul Rudd. And God, I just love Paul. I would, honestly, if I had to marry someone, it would be Paul Rudd, because he's just the nicest guy. He's just the nicest human ever. There's no one as nice as Paul Rudd. I've never met him, but he just seems so lovely. And then on Conan O'Brien's podcast, he was just so nice as well. So
you're starting to sound a little bit stalkerish, Jamie.
Yeah, do you know what? I've stalked him. I've tried to find him. He doesn't have social media. He has nothing. He's like a ghost.
I want a podcast that you're hosting called Finding Paul Rudd and your search to find Paul Rudd.
Oh my God, I love him. It's like catching a Pokemon.
When Clueless came out and you were this fresh-faced young man that showed up on the program, very funny, very nice. And we've constantly been running into each other. I've interviewed you a million times, but also just I'll pass you. I'll have Paul Rudd encounters, sort of like seeing a Yeti in the woods. And it's really always a very nice experience. And I'll tell you exactly about one of them, which is JFK Airport. I think it was JFK. I was walking through JFK Airport, and my wife and I ran into you, and you hadn't shaved, and you were holding a guitar case.
A banjo.
You had a banjo in it. And you said that you were learning it and practicing it, and we just had the nicest talk with you. And here's the weird thing. Every time I know exactly where it was in JFK Airport, because every time I walk through that part of JFK Airport, I have the same thought, which is, yeah, I saw Paul Rudd here with his banjo. Like every single—
I have the exact same memory, and I walk past that same spot, and I think the same thing.
Isn't that weird?
That is.
It's like a nice, there should be a plaque there.
Yeah. And,
that sounds grandiose. I know some people listening are like, that's a little far, but I think there should be a plaque commemorating that you and I had a nice moment there.
I think I said, yeah, I'm trying to learn banjo. And you said something about, do you want to punish your family? Or is that you're...
Yeah. This is probably some cruel remark.
It was very funny. Not so funny that I remember it verbatim, clearly.
No, but it was a solid C+.
Yeah. But I remember laughing. Not so much at the one joke, but more a career in comedy.
Thank you.
The joys about Conan is he has so many contacts and he knows so many people through the years. So, I mean, he's had everyone on the show from Ellen to Sarah Silverman to Steve Coogan, actually this week, Jack Black, like just all these people. And it must be great when you have that Rolodex and you know, that address book that you can just open up and have all those numbers.
Oh, yeah, that's what's so amazing about it. And I think that with his podcast, I started listening to it because he got those big names. You know, he got the ones you've just said, all those different ones. Mm-hmm. What I started to do is I started to listen to the ones which I didn't know so much. He gets a lot of the American comedians on who haven't quite drifted over to the UK. But still, it's just so funny and so entertaining because it's so natural and so relaxed and so chilled. And as always, with a very sort of funny podcast like that, you kind of want to have your... sort of counterparts. You kind of want to have your buddies on it. And he has his assistant called Sona and also his producer called Matt Gourley who work with him. And he just basically, throughout the entire thing, just takes the piss out of them. And it's an amazing relationship that you have. There's that respect there. There's that kind of camaraderie there. There's everything there. It's one of those podcasts that if you are on a run, if you are having a bad day, if you are walking down the street commuting, you can just listen to, sit back and relax. And I think that's sometimes what people need. We are sometimes so involved in like listening to something that's either going to stimulate us or going to teach us something, or we're going to find out something new or this or that, or it's going to make us feel better. But actually there's something really wonderful in just sitting back, relaxed, and just listening to something that's funny, and that makes you feel better. And Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend is perfect for something like that.
Thanks so much for tuning into the special episode of Castaway. Remember to tune in next Thursday for another edition covering a whole new selection of juicy podcasts. As always, we'd love you to rate, review, follow, and subscribe. And I'll see you next time.